So this seminar is on a thing which has been in my mind.
Too loud? I can speak a little more far. Yeah. It's like my voice is weak, so I want loud.
All right.
Yeah. But I can speak more far. Yeah. So if it's too much, it's either the ears or the voice that have to suffer. Yes. So this seminar is on a theme that I've been thinking about for some time. The title of it is A New Branch in the Parampara. I kind of started this thinking process based on two metaphors. The first one is the Chaitanya tree, the tree which is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where we find that Advaita Acharya and Lord Nityananda make up the trunk, and then many of the great, together with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then many great sannyasis who are Paramananda Puri and others are becoming the main branches, and then so many branches are coming off this Chaitanya tree. And Srila Prabhupada describes that ISKCON is also a branch of the Chaitanya tree. This Chaitanya tree is also described as an auspicious desire tree, a Kalyana Kalpataru. So, obviously, I've got that kind of metaphor in mind, and I will read also a little bit about some of the devotees that became branches of the Chaitanya tree. And then there's another famous metaphor, which is about the caravan. And it is stated that the caravan moves on although the dogs are barking. Right? Famous metaphor. So I was thinking, well, let's forget about the barking dogs. I will not speak about any dogs at all. Dogs are dogs as far as I'm concerned, and wish them well, let them bark, and they will bark. But rather, let's speak about the caravan that's moving on. And so, what is this caravan that moves on? It starts with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the other members of the Panchatattva. And it continues in the pastimes that the Panchatattva is displaying with all their eternal associates. These associates are described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Adilila, we find a whole description about different personalities who were a branch of the tree. And we will look at a few of them just to kind of get a taste. But then we find that in the Gaura Ganadesh Deepika, we find that Kavi Karnapur has described the identity of each of the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he has heard it from his father, Sivananda Sen. It is actually, Kavi Karnapur is writing simply what he heard from Sivananda Sen. So it is Sivananda Sen who is revealing to us the eternal identity of all these various associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is to say, eternal identity, rather their identity in the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Because Srila Prabhupada explained that as far as the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that when the devotees go back to Godhead, that some devotees will be in Vrindavan, in the pastimes of Krishna. Some devotees will be in Mayapur, in the spiritual world, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And some devotees will be in both, he explained. Yeah. So therefore, we cannot say that the identity in the Krishna Lila is the eternal identity of the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as if their present identity may not be eternal. It may well be. Okay? So, therefore, but it is stated who they are in Krishna Lila. And that is quite interesting to see that because we are dealing with all these eternally liberated souls. Basically, then, we're dealing with personalities who are just descending from the spiritual world. They're all Nitya Siddhas. And these Nitya Siddha devotees, it is stated in the CC that every single one of them can deliver the entire universe. So they are highly qualified personalities. So our sampradaya, or like to say the parampara, begins in its modern form with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We can, of course, go back more and start Krishna, Narada, Vyas, and then from Vyas we make a big jump because we go to Madhava. Right? So it's like there you go from the classical times to the Middle Ages, practically, because somehow or other Madhavacharya met Vyasadeva in the Himalayas. So there, 3,500 years are just solved, and it's a jump of 3,500 years in the Sampradaya. Yeah. Anyway, we continue from Madhavacharya and eventually Madhavendra Puri, Isvara Puri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We start with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we can say that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was manifesting his Krishna consciousness, what symptoms did the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not display? And every single one of them was overwhelmed with love of God. Right? And that was, there were so many ecstatic symptoms. Of course, no one had ecstatic symptoms like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's also described. But still, it's absolutely extraordinary to see what just these devotees were able to do. Vakreshwar Pandit danced 72 hours, for example. I have not yet seen. I have seen dancing, but not 72 hours. I have seen all kinds of things in our movement. But I have not seen the symptoms described that were there in the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have not seen that level of absorption. I have not found that. Then we can continue. The parampara moves on and we get great acharyas coming after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who actually appeared much later and who kind of writes the Chaitanya Charitamrita as the testimony of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu based on the diaries of Sarup Damodar and Raghunath Das Goswami. Then we see how things move on and we get in the next generations to come, we get great personalities like Narottam Das Thakur, and then we get Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who appears like 100 years later but takes like his inspiration from Narottam, and so the line continues until we come to the acharyas that we are worshipping on our altar, such as Srila Jagannath Das Babaji. And then when we read a little bit about the biography of Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, then we see that he was so absorbed in his bhajan, in his chanting, so deeply, that he would like, for 72 hours, just chant non-stop and be totally ecstatic at the same time. Yeah? Even if we could do it. Yeah? Even if someone would have an incredible determination, yeah? And somehow or other, on the strength of some extraordinary determination, sit there for 72 hours, no sleep, and just chant, right? We would suffer like anything at the same time. It would be like a marathon, you know, chant until you drop kind of marathon. And most of us would drop
before the 72 hours would have been reached. It would be so austere.
But Srila Jagannath Das Babaji was doing that with great pleasure, with ecstasy. So what an extraordinary personality he was. And then we continue and we're seeing like personalities like, who had a connection with him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a connection with him. And Gorkhasurdas Babaji Maharaj was also a contemporary, was also taking initiation or inspiration from him. So we're seeing that then we're coming to our more current acharyas. And then when it comes to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he becomes an interesting personality because he's very different from all the others. In the sense that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is integrated as a modern person. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is beginning to create a model for a modern Vaishnava. We have maybe read Sukhavak's biography about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's called Hinduism in Modernity, which is describing how Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was within his time developing in response to the international influence in India, which began to become very prevalent. And it is described there how at that time in Calcutta there was a whole group of intellectuals, of writers and thinkers who were uniting themselves in some organized form in what was called the Bhadralok, and means the auspicious people, right? So the Bhadralok, they had themselves identified as the one, the enlightened ones, the ones that are going to bring a new sense of direction. So this Bhadralok, they were very interested in the first British who came to India, and there were amongst intellectuals there were very open-minded personalities coming in. The first Indologists, they started Fort Williams in Calcutta on a field called the Maidan, which still exists. And there, there was a group of Orientalists who were actually interested in studying Vedic literature in a scientific way. So that's exactly what the Bhadralok tried to do also. They were trying to use Western, modern, academic means to look at Vedic literatures. And in this way, they were purposely doing that. They were not doing it because they themselves necessarily were so enamored by the West that they held the West as superior. Some of them did. Right? But there were many who were actually thinking that the Vedic philosophy was the essence and was really the truth. But they desired to bring it to the West and to kind of share it with the Western world, and they knew that the Western world will only accept it if we are presenting it in their own type of methodology. So in that way, they had their interest. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur obviously was more in that category. And it is described then how of course, within this Bhadralok, there were two groups. There were Mayavadis and there were devotees. And obviously that distinction was there and so on. And eventually the connection with the Indologists coming from India changed, from England changed, and they became more and more hardline Christian missionaries. And the whole mood became to suppress, convert, to prove systematically that Indian culture was
was inferior. But you see, for example, how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur comes out with a book called Tattva Viveka. And in the Tattva Viveka, he is like giving a critique of Western philosophy in a way that like is so complete, right? A whole overview of Western philosophy, really, from the classic Greeks to like more modern philosophers, well, in his time, you know. And he gives like a brilliant overview, exposing the flaws of all these various philosophers and so on. And that book, Tattva Viveka, besides that it's an interesting book in itself, it's for our discussion relevant and interesting to see how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was kind of opening up to the West. So this is truly the beginning, right, of like a new branch sprouting, one could say. A new branch coming of the parampara, which was distinctly different, because it had never happened before like that. I mean, before, the form of Vaishnavism had not changed. Throughout the Sampradaya, basically the same standards were there, the same way of life. But now Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur began to hint at another way of life and began to open up to Western philosophy and compare it with Vaishnavism and so on. We see the same thing in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is like so intellectually astute, right? And particularly also in Western philosophy. He is like very learned in Western philosophy and give like very deep discourses about it. But he also went like maybe further in harnessing Western means for preaching, and there's that famous encounter where he's driving in a car to Vrindavan in wearing an overcoat, and he steps out of the car and some of the local Babaji's are commenting, "Is this a follower of Rupa Goswami?" Right? And he overheard it and he snapped back at them. He said, "Yes, a follower, not one who is cheaply imitating the Goswamis and by wearing the same dress, but one who takes up the mission of the Goswamis and who's spreading it all over the world." Right? Oops. Right? Everyone was quiet. Right? In front of him, no one could stand up. So it's an extraordinary personality. Now, if we look at we can look at the spiritual qualifications of these acharyas. Now, I had not mentioned Gaura Kishore Das Babaji very much, but his spiritual qualifications are also mentioned as Saksat Vairagya Murtaye. He was very traditional, totally rooted in tradition, but living like a life of renunciation, which like totally turn away from the material world, not interested in making any material arrangements, taking cloth from that was left over at the crematorium from the dead bodies, right? Washing it and wearing that. Right? That settled his clothing problem. Food, an absolute minimum, even known to have eaten clay just to get rid of that hungry stomach, right? And also known for having tied clay in a cloth on his head, right? And just to avoid falling asleep while chanting japa, right? With the weight of the cloth, you wake up. So, and then as he was going blind, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who was already his disciple at the time, suggested he would go to Calcutta and get some glasses. And he said, "Calcutta? Why would I go to Calcutta, such a sinful place? For what reason would I go there?" But blind, that, you know, that's like, who worries about that? Yeah. That's not a problem. That, you know, keep on chanting. So like that, he showed like an otherworldliness which was extraordinary, and not in a spirit of just harsh renunciation, not in a spirit of like punishment, but rather in a spirit of love of God, in a spirit of ecstasy. And so it is said that although he was not literate and could not write, he was regularly explaining the scriptures. Others were reading, and then he was explaining in great depth. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, of course, besides his great scholarship, besides being a powerful preacher and a walking encyclopedia, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is also known for chanting the same number of rounds as Haridas Thakur and following the same rigid vow of 300,000 names a day, right? Which is like virtually impossible. Even if there are exceptional devotees who have done that, chanted it in one day, 300,000 names, 175 rounds, right? Even if there's anyone who's ever done that, not me, I have not made that in one day. But if anyone did, then that's wonderful, but could that same person do it again the next day? And even if so, then the next day, and the day after that, and every day, for 10 years. There are these days that 16 is a struggle. There are days that it's possible to chant 32. That may be. And for some, even 64 when everything is just right. But that many rounds. So, and then finally, we come to Srila Prabhupada, and we're coming to another form. So I go back for a moment to the caravan model that I started earlier. In the front, Lord Chaitanya with his associates, right behind great acharyas who all had their own following, and under Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, a movement, right? A movement that began to really develop. And within that movement, the Gaudiya Mat, also, not that every member of the Gaudiya Mat was displaying this kind of love of God. Right? And even although in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we are reading about the extraordinary associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still, Narahari Sarkar has left us with the Krishna Bhajanamrita, which is an interesting book from also from a historical perspective, because that book is describing how even the contemporaries of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were not all on that platform of love of God. There were also Vaishnavas on the planet at that time who did fall down, and who were not maintaining their standards, and even some spiritual masters who fell down and so on are recorded at that time. At least it is mentioned that it was going on. Not that there is like a long list of names and details, but it's mentioned that it was going on. So historically that's very interesting. Certainly something to think about. Then we come to Srila Prabhupada, and the glories of Srila Prabhupada have obviously been widely described to us many times. And I could say many things. One thing I can say is that Prabhupada is unique in an entire day of Brahma, because he takes Krishna consciousness from east to west. Lord Chaitanya really didn't do that. Right? He took it. He took it around India. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta took it around India, tried the West, but didn't really take off yet. But under Prabhupada, it goes to the West, and it also takes, Krishna consciousness takes its Western form. Whereas under Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, things began to change quite drastically. The car came in, the overcoat came in, and he said that planes were there at the time, and he said, but they should only be used by devotees. Right? Well, we're doing our best. Ecstasy. It's interesting, under Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Vaishnavism is really becoming more and more modern. But it retains a lot of its tradition. And there are, of course, Bengali Vaishnavas. And the Bengali Vaishnavas, they have their own Bengali culture. And that own Bengali culture also very much filters through in the Gaudiya Math. We're seeing in the Gaudiya Math how the certain ways that are just prevalent in Bengal in general are also there in the Math, and a certain strictness about vidhi, about rules. Right? There is a rigidity about rules. Right? A fast, when to break the fast, right? My God, in all the years that I lived in India, right, when to break the fast, right? And that was in many, many years that I was exposed to this cultural manifestation, and I've witnessed how in the Bengali community to break the fast has been like a big debate every time, with each other, right? Big debate amongst each other. There was very rigid ideas about how to follow and apply certain rules, which sometimes seemed to almost contradict the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the mood of Pathitabhava. Prabhupada's mood is distinctly different. Prabhupada comes out as a somewhat different member of the Gaudiya Math. He doesn't look so much like his contemporaries. He is so transcendentally liberal. Yeah? And in fact, he is on this regard at odds with many of his godbrothers, where Prabhupada is stating that Kala Desha Patra, time, place and circumstance, and where Krishna consciousness is to be preached in every country according to the conditions of that country, and that not necessarily the standards of one country apply to another, Prabhupada says in the purport on the CC. So that's like a heavy statement, actually. Yeah? Prabhupada is saying that that Krishna consciousness may have a different form in one country than in another. And we see that he's putting it into practice in many ways. And in some ways, Prabhupada is quite liberal, where in comparison to what's going on, and like today, you know, on an Ekadasi, some papaya, you know, some boiled papaya sabji, would be acceptable. No tomatoes, right? Even potatoes is highly questionable, because potatoes anyway are not Vedic, right? They came from South America. So can a Vaishnava even eat such things? Generally, can a Vaishnava eat anything from under the ground, right? These kind of questions are being raised. Can anything from under the ground be offered to the deity? Right? Carrots, potatoes, and so on, right? It's like already highly questionable, and some are certainly absolutely very rigid. No way. Nah, out of the question. Cannot be offered. And then, of course, there are certain things which are absolutely unacceptable. Chili, right? Chili is not from India, not Vedic. Out, right? Not allowed. No chili. No potato. And tomato. No tomato. No. And even the brinjal, no eggplant also, no, sorry. All import, right? Not Vedic. So, in this way, in all the Ekadasis, all these things are absolutely banned, right? There's no, if you dare to take like a brinjal on Ekadasi, my God, if you take tomatoes, you have just fallen down. So, you know, our typical ISKCON Ekadasi diet, right? Having some Ekadasi pizza, for example, right? With a nice potato base, and for the rest, everything is there. That would really not fly, you know. Just see, you know, what kind of Vaishnavas are these, right? Well, of course, that statement has echoed throughout the land of Bengal. What kind of Vaishnavas are these, right? And well, even I have sometimes raised that question, what kind of Vaishnavas are these? Okay. I was talking the other day about an advertisement that they had in Spain, and they had chartered the devotees for this, and there's these big billboards all over Spain for Schweppes tonic. And they had this easy rider bike, you know, the one with like a motorbike, Harley Davidson with like a very long fork in the front, right? And there was this bit with one of these huge steering bars on it, and so they had about 6 devotees sitting on one of that in dhotis and the whole outfit and everything, right? And they're all like sitting on there, right? And I'm sure that the photographer who made it like thought, this is far out, you know, for the contradiction, you know, of the monks, right, on this bike. And then he thought like that he had like captured the most far out contradiction. I also thought the picture was far out, because I know that that's how these devotees really are. they were themselves, right? They were actually themselves. I thought it was really a far out picture. I mean, it was this kind, you know? I mean, I must get my hands on this, right, on this poster, for when I want to develop this kind of presentation I made today into like a real seminar, and then I will kind of produce a lot of background information, research, and quotes. Now I didn't do anything. I'm just bouncing a concept of you and sort of playing around with it. Oh. But you can see how the new branch begins to form, right, on the Chaitanya tree. Now, to go back to my other analogy, the caravan. The point is that the caravan moves on. Remember, dogs are barking, so let them bark. The caravan moves on. So where is it moving to? It is moving towards the spiritual world. And in front, right, Panchatattva, associates, and so on. Then many great acharyas. And then we see that the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have love of God. Is there any question about it? Right? Topmost level of Krishna praying. Right? And there are stories given here in the CC. I haven't opened it, but still it's inspiring me. Here in the CC, there are stories how the Lord is giving prem. He's giving everybody prem. Mother Sachino, she is an offender. She will not get it. She is offended at Advaita Acharya because she criticized him, since Viswarupa, her elder son, was going to the Bhagavatam lectures of Advaita Acharya and afterwards took sannyas. It must have been because of these lectures. So, in this way, she could not get unless she begged forgiveness. What Chaitanya told Advaita Acharya fainted. How can Mother Sati have offended me? He was unconscious, quickly touched his feet. She took the dust. Then she also got Krishna praying. So we see the gift of Krishna praying. Prema dana, go locate a prema dana. It says again, the gift of prem, the gift of prem. has been given by Krishna, by Sriji. So many of the devotees are displaying that Krishna prema, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he was there, sitting in Mayapur, and he was sitting at these two places that are representing Radhakund and Shyamakund. I am not sure who identified these places as Radhakund and Shyamakund. I'm not sure. Maybe somebody knows. I don't. But I know maybe it was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta who identified them. Maybe it was earlier. That's a little unclear to me. But whatever may be, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was seated there at this Radhakund and Shyamakund. And he was there chanting his 300,000 names. And it is stated that one particular person from Calcutta took interest in him very much. This person was materially quite successful, and he was pushing him. He was really pushing him to come to Calcutta and preach, to just leave that dharma. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was saying, well, why would I go from here? Don't you see that, you know, the divine couple are having their transcendental pastimes right here? You are not seeing, right? And he was totally absorbed in seeing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. So it is, and there's no doubt about it. And all that was obviously confirmed by chanting the 300,000 things a day. So can there be any question as to what level of love of God Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was at? Well, about Srila Prabhupada, I will not say much other than that everybody knows that he was on the topmost platform of love of God. And if anybody doesn't know, then, you know, too bad, you know. Just go like sit under a dark, dead tree and meditate on becoming a vulture in your next life, right? Because I think that's really befitting, because if you are so blind, then you belong in the category of owls and vultures. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is referring to the owls, and it said, Ulukana deke surirakiran. Dekina deke abaktiragan, Ulukana deke surirakiran. That the, while looking, it is said, they don't see. While looking, they don't see. The owls, they cannot see the rays of the sun. That is Chaitanya Charitamrita in this regard. So I didn't want to dedicate this particular hour and something to extensively describing Srila Prabhupada's glories and details. Let it just be understood as a proven fact. But then, right? Then we're looking in the caravan and we see all these great personalities, and then we see Prabhupada also dancing in the caravan of Vaishnavas with all the international Vaishnavas. Now I already described that the Gaudiya Math was also not so filled with just pure devotees, and that there was a lot of devotees who never became above the material platform. I mentioned that even at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were Vaishnavas who never made it to the transcendental platform. And all throughout the time, along with the caravan, there were devotees who were not on the spiritual platform. And after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was a period when the entire knowledge of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was lost. And Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur made it his business to re-establish the proper teachings, because everyone had become sahaja. All the Vaishnava groups, they were not following any regulative principles, and it was all radhe radhe, but no actual practice, no regulative principles, no practicing of proper devotional service. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur re-established the bona fide process. Okay? So, it's not that just now is the only time that we're seeing so many devotees who do not have love of God. But still, we're seeing that now the movement went worldwide and that it was like a transplant, right? Like a total transplant, a culture transplant. And here we are in this, suddenly there is this Krishna consciousness in the middle of our lives. And suddenly we are somehow or other becoming swept up in it. And here we are, you know, like, look at us, right? Just go home for Christmas, you know? What have we done? Where are we? So here, we're finding not only that, like, a traditional culture from India, where the Vedas have its roots, is brought to the West. Not only that, but we also find that a traditional culture, a traditional culture of like Krishna consciousness, has been transplanted into the modern world. If this Krishna consciousness would have come to the West before the Industrial Revolution, it would have been much easier. I mean, the world would have been like much closer to what Vaishnavism. It wouldn't have been so hard. Just we would have to tell people, stop killing your cows, right? Protect them, you know. But they were already plowing the fields with bullocks anyway. And you have to understand that they weren't just slaughtering cows left and right. They didn't have organized big slaughterhouses like we have now. Like factories, you know, where people are, where animals are just shipped in, they didn't have. Right? When animal slaughter was going on, it was going on in an individual way. The local butcher was taking responsibility of that directly, basically. There were no big trucks supplying the whole, all the shops, etc. An organized arrangement with unlimited animals. And like my grandfather, who was from a village in the north of Holland, somewhere way up north, told me that they would only eat meat once a week, so on Sunday, after the church. He said he would buy a cigar on Saturday, and he would smoke half on Saturday, then extinguish it, and smoke the other half after church on Sunday. Yeah? And then, you know, they have a big feast dinner at night, right? Everyone's like really going for it. And okay, they drink and, you know, celebrate like that. Well, you know, if you compare that to modern times, shoot. So, and that's my grandfather. I mean, that's like the beginning of the century kind of, you know. When he was sort of young. So, what can we say? Not so long ago. And then if you take it back a little further, before the Industrial Revolution, where we had an agrarian-based culture in the West, well, then it would have been so easy, right, to just make a few little changes and Krishna consciousness could have grown roots. Even people were like very religious and pious, they were kshatriyas, everything was there. Right? They were vaishyas, it was all in place. The whole Varna ashram was in place. Yeah? It's just been destroyed somewhere since 18 something, started to kind of dismantle it.
The society was much more in different groups.
Yeah.
Ordinary
yeah.
people, they didn't mix with the
yeah.
noble ones or with the
clerics. But so much more Varna ashram, just like in India. In India you have villages, you know, like the Brahmins. It's not that like the village, in a village you have Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, the whole lot. But they live all in paras, you know. It's called paras, right? So every community has its own para, right?
So there is the Gautam Para, that means it's a Kshatriya Para. Yeah? There is the Shastri Para, okay, it's a Brahmin Para, right? Bangi Para, where the sweepers live. So they have their areas, right? And they live together in an area. Yeah? And every Indian village is like that. Yeah? And they mix, but they live in their own areas. And sometimes they're even like little villages in groups, right? And there's like a Brahmin village, a Kshatriya village. And each of their, they live in separate villages, but very close to each other. So you find like little Brahmin villages, little Kshatriya villages. And it's still like that in the Vrindavan area, not only there, all over Bihar, you find it. And all that is going on. Whoa. Here he comes. Yeah. Anyway, I want to take it a little further. So we'll just... I guess I'll just... let the curtain open. So now the next point that I wanted to bring up is this, is that Srila Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha is describing that there are different types of devotees who are on the transcendental platform, on the pure transcendental platform. And they may all be recognized as pure devotees. So the first one is described to have 2 feet in the spiritual world. Yeah? And then manifest down here in this material world. So that's obviously referring to the Nitya Siddha devotees who came from the spiritual world and who are fully aware of their transcendental identity in their eternal relationship with Krishna. And then it describes that there are devotees who have 1 foot in the material world and 1 foot in the spiritual world. And they are meant to be the sadhana siddha, those who have attained perfection through devotional service. And these devotees, it is said, they also are antaranga bhaktas. They are also on the aware of their eternal position. And just like it is described that Raghunadas Goswami became engaged as the servant of Swarup Damodar Goswami, who engaged him in Antaranga Seva. Antaranga Seva means that one is being engaged according to his Siddha Deha, according to his eternal identity. So, I mean, this sometimes you hear people who come back from Vrindavan and talk about this stuff, right? Or some people who are reading books from either some of the Goswami literatures or some other books published outside of this kind about this this topic where we speak about our Siddha Deha. So I mentioned 2 categories of pure devotees who have realized their Siddha Deha and are counted as pure devotees. And then there's a 3rd category counted. And that category is the devotee that has 2 feet in the material world, but his eyes fixed on Krishna's lotus feet. And that is the 3rd category described in the Bhakti Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami as a devotee who is then not aware of his Siddha Deha and yet counted as a pure devotee, as a liberated devotee. There are many definitions of pure devotee being applied, sometimes very liberal, sometimes very strict. But here we're seeing as a
as one who is truly on the transcendental platform. Mm-hmm. So it's important, this reference of the Bhakti Sandarbha, I find, because it's well, we are looking at spiritual leadership in our movement. We are searching out spiritual leadership, and we are finding inspiring spiritual leaders in our movement. But at the same time, we don't find anyone who can do what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta did, and even in chanting as many rounds, what to speak of being as learned as he was. But and we don't find anyone who could possibly do what Srila Jagannath Babaji did. And we don't find another Gaura Das Babaji, and so on. We don't find another Prabhupada. And if there was, we would all be very inspired. And some people are sad. Some people are feeling like, what to do. We can only pray for the next acharya to manifest. So there are all kinds of, so here we are in the world of ISKCON, the new branch on the on this parampara. And this new branch is very different from the previous branches. Right? Because here we're living in a world using all kinds of Ugra Karma products. Right? Ugra Karma, horrible work meant to destroy the world. Prabhupada calls factories in Bhagavatam the dungeons of the demons. Right? The dungeons of the demons. So, you know, our whole life is full of products from the factory. Yeah? I mean, I like to, present to you about the cooks that are just preparing a Sunday feast. You know, no worries, right? Get ready. Okay. It sounds like a car workshop, right? In there. It sounds really like serious, like. Some car works, a garage, you know, and we're cooking in the garage. So our modern model, our way of life, is so far away. And of course, sadhus with cell phones, you know, in their beat bags. It's like, you know, the cell phone is, Handy. Auf Deutsch, Handy. Das heißt, auf Englisch, cell phone. Mobile, this is, braucht man nicht so. Ach so. Sie sagen ja, cell phone. Yeah, cell phone. Yeah, what can we say? So with your phone, and so on. So we are like, indeed, a very unusual branch, right? Because we are Westerners, we have cultural roots, which are not at all Krishna conscious, and we have cultural roots which have systematically broken the regulative principles. Just look at Asterix and Obelix, yeah? And you get like a whole kind of view of like what Europe was like, right? And what our roots are, you know. Menhirs, and like at the end there's a big feast and they roast one, and then you get the Germans come also in every once in a while, right? And there's these Gothic letters, and you know, they're doing their thing, and even the Vikings are there and everything, right? So they're all there, and all different barbarian tribes, right? Compared to the Romans, who are more cultured, but also not that cultured, because they also have given up Vedic culture, but they had remnants of it. And the Greeks, the famous Greek culture is being so overly glorified in the West, with remnants of Vedic culture, but at the same time quite barbarian things. For example, they would slaughter cows and throw the body in a pit of fire and then smear honey over the whole body. Yeah? And then, yeah, great delicacy of the ancient Greeks. Right? Just get some Greek history besides Plato and Socrates to put it a little more in perspective. Well, so I came now to us here. We're looking for, and I spoke about spiritual leadership. We're looking for it. Apparently, we don't see right now such effulgent leaders that were in the first two categories described of Jiva Goswami's Bhaktisandarbha. We don't see them. We don't have such gurus. And I guess the most realistic thing might be the model of 2 feet in the material world and the eyes on Krishna as a model, right, that we can look up to in a more realistic way. Because if we start walking around like my spiritual master is a Nitya Siddha, then we, you know, kind of like go, okay, we've heard that before. We went through all that, you know, in the late 70s and in the 80s, right? And it changed, you know. I mean, it changed. I mean, that idea was there once, and then gradually the views changed quite a bit on these matters. And I think now a more mature outlook will be, well, first of all, Vaishnavira Kriya Vigyana Bujaya. One cannot understand the level of advancement of the senior Vaishnava. So I'm not trying to minimize any of the Vaishnavas in our movement. I don't know. Right? But I'm saying if we ourselves are looking for spiritual leadership, then we should know that we can be satisfied with that third model. Yeah. That at least that should be there. That third model, 2 feet and 2 eyes, 2 feet material world, eyes fixed on the Lord. So, with that, I'm sketching a whole Sampradaya and a new branch, and I've just kind of, in 1 hour and 15 minutes, set the stage for a seminar which will unfold more over the next few days. All I can say is that this seminar opens up many questions. It opens up questions of Guru Tattva. It opens up questions of how we can actually practice, how we can actually be in parampara and yet be in modern times and so on. So it opens up questions between a modern way of life and a traditional way of life, the value of it. It opens up many questions, and maybe by now you have some questions, and I hope so, on everything I've said. And then in the next few days, whenever the opportunity arises, I will open up also more questions. I'll zoom in on some of these things. Referring back to the bigger frame, you have been here for the beginning. There will be many devotees coming in the next few days who have not been there for the beginning, so I'll kind of summarize some essential points, I guess. Because basically what we're looking at today is the caravan. Right? And the caravan goes on. And one point is that as long as we are very careful to belong to the caravan, we can get the same benefit as all the other members up along the rows, up to the very front.
even although we may not be as qualified. But by the mercy of all these collective predecessor Vaishnavas, we can also get that same mercy. And therefore Srila Prabhupada said, just one lifetime, and we can go back to Godhead, 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles, and sincere surrender in devotional service, and go back to Godhead. Okay, so let me see. I'll stop for a while and see if there's someone who wants to respond.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. Wonderful lecture. I would say that this point that we should not judge others too much, this is a very important point, because you really cannot really see their advancement.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know some devotees who artificially criticize others, very easy to fall down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. It's like become a big fashion, you know, like to publish magazines, right? Blaspheming all kinds of Vaishnavas who have done tremendous service, who have taken great vows and who are upholding them, and to just minimize them. Right? It's like we know. Many of us are initiated devotees, and even the first initiation is no joke. And anybody who is following 4 regulative principles, that's no joke. Even anybody who's not initiated, who's following that, that's no joke. Yeah. That's not an ordinary person. And if someone maintains that, must be a special person. What to speak if someone is doing more and more and more? Must be a very special person. Yeah. And if someone is carrying many others, that's not ordinary. So yes, you're right. We should not criticize so many Vaishnavas. But then again, you see, if you go on the whole Guru Tattva issue, you can see that there are different philosophies that have developed, right, with time. And there are those who have criticized, right, the gurus to a point where they've just said they are practically non-entities. Some have tried to reduce them to the level of non-entities and said Prabhupada is the prominent link. It's all Prabhupada. Others have said that no, it's not like that, but still Prabhupada is the main person. Many questions have been considered. Like, one question that is being raised then, and from time to time, is the question, who is actually delivering the disciple? So I'm asking to you, because you're supposed to be interactive these days, so I'm reverting it. I'm becoming it now, because it came from history to modern times. I'm not totally in modern times, okay. Who is delivering the disciple? Tapas might know the answer, of course. You have to wait to let someone know. It's not fair. Anybody? If nobody knows it, then Tapas will say. Okay, no, Tapas.
No, Guru as well.
Well, Tapas is right. Yeah. And Guru also, well, Guru is, like Prabhupada said it many times, right? The postman, remember? Prabhupada says he's the postman. And the postman is not supposed to change anything. The example has been given that if the postman has a letter, and if the letter says, inside it says, pay, it's a letter to Tapas, you know, dear Tapas, please pay, what's your name?
Maitreya Rishi.
Yeah, okay. Dear Tapas, please pay Maitreya Rishi, you know, 100 euros. And I, as the postman, open up the letter, change that, and say, please pay the bearer of this letter 100 euros, right? And deliver the letter to Tapas. Yeah? So, postman has to simply deliver it as it is, without any change. And that was Prabhupada's point, the postman.
the Buddhist way. So, also, samsara dhavana vilita loka, tranaya garunya gana ganatvam. The spiritual master is like a rain cloud, right, who is extinguishing the forest, of the blazing forest of material desires, forest, blazing forest fire. So, this Dhammala, blazing forest fire. But where is the rain cloud getting its water from? From the ocean. Just like Sandipani Muni, who was the guru of Krishna, who received his knowledge from Krishna. And then it said then that knowledge came just in the form of a cloud from the ocean of Krishna and became deposited on the mountain of Sandipani Muni and came down in the form of a river and then was like being distributed and like that, flowing everywhere. But he got it from Krishna. So first, also Dharmam to Saksat Bhagavat Pranitam, that only Krishna is the one who can establish through religious principles. Then also CC Adi 145, right, which since I have the book here, I may as well let me find it. Guru Krishna Rupa Hoya Shastri Praman. Guru Rupa Krishna Kripa Korena Bhakta Gan. And now we look for the translation which is here. Because I'm not so good in learning translations by heart. Okay. 52, 42. According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is not different from Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotees. So, what is the purport of this? That actually it is Krishna who is delivering, but the spiritual master is acting as the instrument of Krishna. He's just the pure instrument of Krishna. If he's not a good instrument, then he cannot deliver. Right? Like that. But it is Krishna, ultimately. There's no doubt. So that is a fact. But the guru has to be the via media. Then he is bona fide.
I'm not qualified to say anything, but just comes into my mind. Your example with this caravan is very nice. But I think also it may be a little bit like a chain. So, you know, because every single member in this parampara holds on the four, on his guru, and also holds on his disciples.
Sure.
And so one has to be very strong to bear this pulling forces to get the train in the right direction. Of course, Krishna is a locomotive who is really on the beginning. He has the biggest power. He pulls the train, that's true. But I think all the different
links have to be strong.
Otherwise, right. If some links is breaking, the train will go off.
Yeah.
So that's good. It's not that only Krishna is pulling. We also have to do our part.
Yes. Yes.
But especially.
But Krishna is obviously the one who delivers, but everyone has to play his part, correct? Yeah. No, it is like that. It's true. So, but, okay, that's a question that comes up. Right? And it's important because the question is which part the guru has to play? That's one question that is being raised. Some feel, so what is the qualification of a guru to be able to deliver his disciples from birth and death? Is a big question. If you look at the previous acharyas, it's real easy. They all, we can easily chant on the guru shi charanarindam, and you know the hairs are standing on the end, and all the sattvika bhava transformations are there, right? The asta sattvika bhavas. So, very nice, right? But like, are we seeing this in ISKCON regularly happening? Not so much. So what to do with this asta sattvika bhavas? Talk of.
And there is one purport which the Prabhupada describes. How even a spiritual master who is from one point of view, not liberated in terms of being totally transcendental or having these symptoms, but he is sincerely, strictly following the Acharya, then he is still able to deliver his disciples.
It's a letter.
It's a letter, right.
Yeah. It describes like great Acharyas like Narottamas Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and says they are, whatever they say is as good as scripture. But sometimes there are also those who are acting as spiritual masters who are not on that platform. But if they are following those who are, then they're also bona fide. I mean, that's like the famous example. Yes. Well, I also gave like the Bhakti Sandarbha model as something to look at. The eyes on Krishna and on the spiritual world, and there's a lot of confusion out there. You know, I mean, the reason why I'm bringing it up is because we are living in an environment. We have our new branch of ISKCON, and then we're living in an environment of devotees, and we have all kinds of offshoots. Right? We have people who are Ritviks, we have people who are going to Narayan Maharaj and are like going towards Rasika Bhakti, we have people who are with the Radhakund Babajis, we have a Sachin Narayan who went like with Haridas Shastri, who says our Sampradaya is not bona fide, he's in the last three generations, right? And we have all kinds of offshoots and people on the marketplace of Krishna consciousness, right? Who are telling us like, here, you know, you get the better quality thing, right? And some people are saying, well, how about that, you know? I mean, shouldn't you have an Uttama Adhikari? Some people have preached, ISKCON is a great hospital, but there are no doctors. Ooh. Right? It's like, you know, what can we say? Yeah? We've heard all kinds of things. And what would you say when you hear such things? That's why I'm kind of like stirring it up a little bit to bring out some of these offshoots and just show where they have misconceptions. The point is this, is that some have an inflated idea of what a spiritual master has to be to be able to deliver the disciple. Some think that he must absolutely, definitely know at least his siddhanteha. He must know his eternal form. He must at least, he must definitely have love of God. Like, complete, right? Complete. And there can absolutely be no anarta. No anarta, right? I mean, could there be an anarta in a spiritual master? That's a big question. What do you think? You all are really very actively involved, isn't it? I see lots of hands and lots of comments. Yeah, anybody who's brave and bold, other than these two, can also.
I think this is a main idea that Krishna wants to deliver us. It's Lord Chaitanya's will. So in one, he will do it.
Yes. Fine. He will do it. He wants to do it. Yes, but it's also described how he's doing it. So it's not just only the will, but there's more than that. It's also described that, like here, it is stated that Krishna is doing it. He is actually doing it. And remember that famous picture where in the ocean of material nescience and Krishna pulls us out by the Sika, right? On the back of Garuda. Have you seen that one? Never seen that one? Yeah, old picture, very old. It's Krishna who delivers us from the ocean of nescience. And the spiritual master is a connection. He must be a bona fide connection. He must be a good connection. And the more potency he has, the more he can do to help us. And just like Prabhupada,
And Prabhupada is actually in several letters. Now I'm just quoting from memory because I told you I didn't like prepare this thing properly by working out all the details nicely and researching them and just show you, and here's a quote and read it out, and this is the number and here it is. I'm just doing it all from memory. Prabhupada does say, he speaks also about Hiranyakasipu and how Lord Brahma was giving him this benediction. Yeah? And as a result of the benediction of Lord Brahma, that was the word of Lord Brahma. So Krishna kept the word of Lord Brahma and appeared as not in the day, not in the night, not inside, not outside, right? Killed him like on his lap, killed him at twilight with the nails, and he was neither human and so on, and nor animal. So he upheld the words of Lord Brahma. So Prabhupada is making this point. We see Uchu, the sage, is speaking and Krishna is upholding whatever he says. And Prabhupada said, therefore, if the pure devotee says that you simply follow four regulated principles and chant 16 rounds and you'll go back to Godhead, then you will go. Right? Then you will go. So like Prabhupada just said it like that, bang. That's proof there. And I have another quote also somewhere, I can produce it. On the same point. Plus a third one, a story where Prabhupada said something like that in Baltimore Temple. So it's very interesting because it shows an additional element. It shows an element that just the added mercy. Just the added mercy of one great acharya, boom, right? That adds up. And then behind him, he's kind of created a channel. He's just created a channel through which one can go, even if one is not so purified. And then those who are behind that acharya, those who are behind Prabhupada as gurus, at least the eyes fixed on Krishna. That must be there, at least. Right? Then they can bring people to that point who just follow the stand, go back to Godhead. So that means that even if one doesn't have Krishna praying in this world, one can still go back to Godhead. We had some discussion on this some years ago. I was in Mayapur and Pankajangri was giving class, Jananivas was there, and this point came up about, and just at that point, Kapi Chandra Maharaj walked in, and he had been in Prabhupada's Samadhi in the morning for Mangal Arati, and Prabhupada has this huge garland, so fat like this, and he was wearing it, you know. He was still wearing it like during Bhagavatam class, like a python, you know, like a garland as big as a python around his neck. So in the middle of the class, he comes in and the door bursts open and there comes this personality with this like python garland, you know, so everyone's looking like, wow. What an entrance, right? Class stopped, you know, everyone, Maharaj, you know. Okay. Then he sat down and we had a big discussion on this topic. And finally, what came out is that like, yes, praying is nice. It's like a bonus. Right? It's a bonus. Right? It's not a prerequisite for going back to Godhead. Yeah? But if you get it in this life, it's a bonus. It's very nice to get, of course. And it already comes. It's not... anyway, let's start that later. It's a bonus. And it's not the prerequisite for going back to Godhead. The prerequisite is just to follow purely and to dedicate oneself to devotional service in this movement, 16 rounds, four regulative principles. Bang! Back to Godhead. On Prabhupada's say-so. Yeah? And there we go. And that was the mood. I've done a seminar which was called From 66 to 99. I did it in 1999. And in 66, everything was like, we're all going to go back to Godhead. And in 99 was like, maybe, you know, if you read, theoretically speaking, it is possible that someone could go back to Godhead this lifetime. But practically, of course, impossible. And it's going to take at least hundreds of, you know, lifetimes or more, or maybe millions. And, you know, like, I mean, you got to be realistic and natural. And what can you do? You know, you do the best you can. But at the same time, don't force yourself, you know. Whatever you do, don't force yourself, right? You know, gotta go slow, you know. Slow and steady wins the race. Yeah. You got that. Yeah. So the mood changed distinctly from 66 to 99. 66, everything was up, you know. 66, 99. So, what shall we say? 66 was, everyone is going back to Godhead. We're all going, there's no doubt about it.
Also, in the etiquette between relationship to Diksha Guru or other gurus who are not your Diksha Guru, it's said that if the other spiritual masters are very powerful, maybe on a quite higher level than your Diksha Guru, you still are supposed to follow your Diksha Guru, not be unchaste.
Yes.
So according to that argument, that you should just surrender to somebody who is
then
that doesn't please Krishna.
Exactly. Because you have this whole thing, you know, like the people look for the most powerful guru wherever he can be found, right? And always look like, where is he? You know, where is he? And some have developed the philosophy that there must at least always be one. There must be one on the planet somewhere. And if he's not in ISKCON, then maybe he's with the neighbors. And it happens to be an advertisement out right now that the neighbors are coming to town. And yes, sure enough, they have the right model in stock. And you can get it now for free, only in this special offer. Buy now, buy now, buy now. And off you go to the neighbors, you know, like this is your chance, you know, to get the real thing. Right? Connect now. This is your one chance, you know. Yes. But shouldn't we wait a little longer? No, you can do it today. Right? Because, you know, you never get such a chance again. Take it now. It's for free. Wow. Well, yes. And 100 people say, yes, you should do it. Well, maybe I should. So all this is also, we're living in this environment. Right? We're living in this environment. And we have seen reactions to this kind of environment. And the reactions to this environment, we have mostly seen from an organizational level. Like, and the organizational level is more like, dear devotees, right? Today we're having a series, Ishta Goshti, and we want to make it very clear that ISKCON devotees are not allowed to go, you know, across these lines, and if you do, you will be shot. And then we kind of, you know, think like, and it's a resolution number X1714 ABCDFG, and like, you know, and if you are not following them, you know, serious consequences. You can be either ABCD censored, removed, or like, you know, kind of called in front of a committee, and so on, you know, it's like, have to go through endless meetings and similar punishments. So we've heard, but like the fact of the matter is actually that there's a philosophical misconception. It's the whole idea is it starts off with a philosophical misconception, thinking that like the most powerful guru is the one who will be able to deliver me the best. No, like Tapas is bringing out the point, faithfulness to one's own guru. See, the thing is this, once you accept a spiritual master, it's not just that the spiritual master is delivering you by his potency, but at that time, it's not only that the mercy is coming down through the spiritual master, but the service is also offered back up through the spiritual master, through Krishna.
And so if someone is initiated and is like trying to, is not very interested in serving a spiritual master, but is trying to serve Krishna in some other way, right? Krishna will see that service and Krishna will say, nice. I'll throw you a few crumbs of mercy. And, but it's not going to shower you with mercy. Like he's going to shower that devotee who is like going through all the trouble of going through the relationship with his spiritual master and trying to become like just a servant, a willing instrument. Poof, he's showered with mercy because Krishna knows that's difficult. That's not easy. And what does Srila Jiva Goswami say in the Bhakti Sandarbha? He says that the relationship with the spiritual master is like the testing ground. Krishna is using that relationship as the testing ground, and he's seeing how is he doing here, you know? How is like the surrender taking place here in this relationship? And when that relationship works well, then Krishna says, like, okay, now you can have a relationship with me. Yeah? So it's very important to go through one's own. Time is moving along. How much further to take this? I kind of decided to take the bull by the horns, as you can see. To take the bull by the horns means to go for the sensitive topic straight on. Guru, Tattva, and so on. I'm doing it quick and off the cuff. Later in the year, I'll present it in a much more sophisticated
form. I'm very fond, but just one thing comes to my mind. When Hanuman offended this little ant when they wanted to build this bridge, you know, Ramachandra was not very happy. He said, this little ant or whatever, spider, you know, he's just taking one corn sand. This is actually the same thing as you having a full mountain. So Ramachandra is actually pleased with our sincerity and our effort. If somebody is a spiritual master and he's very fallen and he comes from a Western background and he has no qualification, but he really tries his best and tries so hard, and Krishna is also very much pleased with him.
Okay, yeah, very true. Of course, you know, I've been like in India for 25 years of my life, I'm 52 now, almost half my life, and my conclusion was that in India everyone is very fallen, and that like there is no question that there is anyone who is any more exalted in India than in the West. All I was in charge of an ashram for many years, and all the insight dirt, you know, comes ultimately in the president's office. Yeah? Not all, but, you know, all the dirt that's found out. The dirt that's not found out, I'll never know. But, you know, all the fall downs, all the dishonesty, all the corruption, all the problems, all the degradation, right, that just exists in an ashram, we get it on our desk. Right? So, one should never think, right, that in India, Kali Yuga is not present. That's one of the big illusions, you know. There may be a culture, right, that was once Vedic culture that was favorable. And Prabhupada said, it's like that culture, he compared it to an elephant, and he said, that elephant is now dead. It's dead. It has died. Right? Prabhupada declared the elephant of Vedic culture dead. In other words, he said, Vedic culture is dead. Yeah? He said, but even a dead elephant is still valuable. So the remnants of what is there of Vedic culture is still very valuable. And there are everywhere good and innocent people, right, who are like not totally degraded and who are trying to be good people, but who have some bad habits. And that's what you find in India and also in the West. So I think we should not. There was a time in ISKCON when there were 11 gurus only, yeah? And they were all Westerners. Yeah? Then, you know, like we saw
One went down, Jayadhir. Then in 83, they started to add a few more. Gaur Govinda Maharaj became one, Gopal Krishna Maharaj became one, and then was the third, maybe Swarup Dhamma Maharaj, I guess so. I guess that's what it was, and it expanded. And then later, and in 87, then things opened up for many gurus. So initially, the whole thing was many Western gurus, but then when from the original 11, more went down, then we got a reaction, and everyone went for the Indian gurus. You know, as long as it's Indian, oh, it's good. And when it's not Indian, whew, you know, you can't trust it. But I would think that that's not necessarily the qualification at all. I would think that really, Western or Indian, it's like taking shelter of Prabhupada, taking shelter of the process. No one is qualified. Everyone is a resident of the age of Kali, irregardless of the place of birth. And India is not saved from the age of Kali at all, at all. Prabhupada was speaking about the sterilization program of Sanjay Gandhi, you know, it's like Indira Gandhi's son. There was an emergency rule in India for many years, you know, due to the strange situation with Pakistan. No elections, and Indira Gandhi was in charge, a very absolute rule from 75. And then there was this heavy regime, and they had like a sterilization program to bring down the population, and they were sterilizing many men. And then they had a big program. It was Sanjay Gandhi who was heading it up. And they had a big program with the Babaji's at Radha Kund. The Prabhupada said, even the government knows. Even the government knows. Yeah. It's supposed to, aren't there four regulated principles? Then what's the need for these, for sterilization? Even the government knows. Yeah. So, it's not Indian or Western. It's the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and connecting to it through the Sampradaya and Parampara. Okay, I'm coming to my end. Yes.
I just wanted to say a small comment. I think you're a very progressive person.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that's almost shocking.
Yeah.
Like you are discussing topics of the heart of our movement. You're bringing them right out in front of the temple room.
Yeah, right in front of the Sringadevi. They haven't even really opened the... They haven't even let the cat out of the bag.
And I think you are... You're expecting us to have discussions with you.
No. I'm just trying to shock you. You're not shocked. Go ahead. Yeah.
I just think that's really it's a very needed step in our movement.
Mm.
But for me personally, I feel that I don't really have the basis to really enter into discussions.
No, like I don't expect it. I mean, it's just a seminar you're supposed to, you know. So I'm just following the rules from Rasa Mandal. Right? The king of education who like says you have to be interactive. So I'm a little surrendered to it. Although I make jokes about it all the time, you know, about being interactive. But no. So if another thing is I'm looking for a few directions to see how it goes down. Okay? And one problem with what I'm doing here today is I told you it's an idea, it's a concept which I haven't actually developed into a seminar, which I'm just presenting as it flows out of my head. And the danger of that is that it could become overemphasized in a certain direction. Whereas if you plan the whole thing out better, you make it more balanced. Right? So it could be today. I might It might be necessary that there are some balancing comments. But I have, like, you know, they did a good job on that. And your comments also appreciated.
But one, concerning the subject matter of the discussion, I think, what for me, I think is interesting how ISKCON is doing something really new by having a GBC, a managerial platform, and then spiritual masters who are supposed to be servants of that managerial platform.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know about that, you know. Tell you the truth, I think that it's like cooperation. I don't think that the GBC is exactly... The GBC may be the ultimate managing authority and also naturally highly advanced spiritual personalities are there. And then there may be spiritual masters who are not GBCs. I don't think that it's entirely like a vertical relationship. Yeah. I think it's like there must be a very deep mutual understanding between the two. I think if you try to set up like vertical relationships, I think then you're getting in trouble. So this is something they're trying to work out. You know, I've heard that some people indeed want to like kind of make it more and more that like you are... that the spiritual master is sort of an agent of the GBC, an ambassador, right? Words like that, you know, a spiritual ambassador. No, I don't think so. I think that ultimately you cannot legislate or appoint these things. A true spiritual master has to simply be a genuine servant according to the scripture. The scripture is the real standard. Like some are saying that we should no longer put a stamp of approval on any guru, but rather, you know, anybody, at least any prophet disciple, should be able to initiate if he wants to, and people should just figure it out for themselves on the basis of scripture. And senior devotees may advise, but not put rubber stamps of this one is certified, the wool mark is there. Is the real thing. So there are very liberal opinions and there are the very like, you know, hardcore, no, you know, so there must be first all kinds of exams and all kinds of committees and all kinds of tests before someone is can be given such an important post. We've had enough trouble. So there are different views on these matters. And the views also change. So therefore, my view is that like these two, are the leadership of ISKCON. And they can balance each other out. Yeah. I think that they're meant to balance each other out. Yeah, spiritual heads and managerial heads, and that, you know, both, because ultimately all are spiritual leaders, so everyone can sometimes have the right bond. But I think that that's where it will end up. And even if we get some temporary structures, some temporary resolutions in between, but you can study the history of GBC resolutions on Guru Tattva, and on the relationship between Guru and GBC. It's not exactly a straight line, right? If you look at that, it's as zigzag as the ornaments on the ceilings, you know? And like the policy. Today, we believe this, we believe this. We actually believe that we're going right now, we believe it. Well, we're turning left. Yeah? You can study the GBC resolutions on the topic. And it's just not cut and dry. I think what it really requires is ongoing dialogue. I think what's required is balance. You know? And it's like balance in motion. And it's like, I'm from Holland, which is bicycle country, you know? So balance in motion is all about like bicycle riding, right? You have to constantly adjust. So I think dialogue and balance in motion. Personalism, yeah? Instead of like impersonal systems, I think these things have to be worked out in personal relationships. Mm. So one says that everyone in his box, in your box. I don't like that so much. Your boxes. I believe in enlightened anarchism. The Brahmins are above the law. I like that.
It's a risky a little bit.
It's Krishna's system. Krishna. No, Brahmins were above the law as long as they acted as Brahmins. When Ashwatthama did not act like a Brahmin, he was no longer allowed the status of a Brahmin. So it's not that Brahmins could do anything. They were above the law as long as they acted within the purview of scriptures. That's what I say. Enlightened anarchism, not anarchism. I think we should get ready for prasad. 2 o'clock, it's scheduled. So, I've let a lot of deep points loose on you in very short, condensed form. And the risk is that some people might walk away from this and just like think about it. And so please, if you do, and some questions come up, write them down. And for the next session, just ask a question. I don't know exactly where the next session will be. I have to think about it, where it will go. It can go in any direction. I hope it was alright. If not, forgive me. Can I do? I'm a rascal. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Shri Prabhupada.